Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Weird World Podcast. My name is Carrie.
Hi. How are you doing, Carrie?
Great, Dean. How are you doing?
I'm so excited. You're
welcome.
Carrie, what do you know about Madagascar?
Everything.
Okay, go ahead. Start listing some things.
I know that Taylor's from Madagascar.
Don't know who that is.
Taylor's, people who...
Oh, they said so, Taylor is from Madagascar.
No. Somebody, okay. Taylor's from Madagascar have a superstition against crossing stitches.
Intriguing.
I just literally learned that in the last 5 minutes.
That is a strange little minor detail about Madagascar. What else do you know about Madagascar?
Nothing.
Not even the famous Disney movies?
You know, I've seen it. I think they have lemurs there.
They do have lemurs there. Good. That's pretty good, Carrie. Madagascar, as you might not know, apparently is the fourth largest island in the world.
Well, who knows that?
A lot of people know that. It is almost 227,000 square miles. That's about the size of the state of Texas. It has 32 million people. Also similar, a little bit more, 1.5 million or so more than the state of Texas.
Interesting.
Its capital is Antananarivo. And there are other words in the Malagasy language that are much harder to pronounce. They have some words with 57 syllables and a lot of vowels.
Really? I do know also one more. Fun
well,
fact.
I think I was just going to say it, but I'll go ahead.
They make vanilla there.
They make vanilla. They are the foremost supplier of vanilla in the world, followed by Mexico and Tahiti.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I think that they, don't they make like by far the most actual real wild vanilla? Not wild, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Real, legit vanilla.
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So I personally feel a kinship with them because, as you know, Carrie, big fan of vanilla.
Well, who's not?
I'm sure there are plenty of people who don't like vanilla.
I think literally no one doesn't like vanilla.
That seems ethnocentric.
Well,
I don't know. The island lies off the coast of Southeast Africa, as you know, and it's actually pretty close to Southeast Africa, but it's very deep, and it's the winds between Africa and the mainland and Madagascar are not favorable to reaching there because the first wave of folks who came to Madagascar were from Southeast Asia. In fact, as far as they think, South Borneo in Indonesia, what's now Indonesia. And of course, they found a land that was just very different, even though it's close to Africa, very different. It split off like 180 million years ago from Africa.
Uh-huh.
And it just has a completely different flora and fauna. They, of course, are, as you said, famous for lemurs,
mm-hmm.
who live nowhere else in the world anymore. They used to, but live nowhere else in the world except for the Comoro Islands, which are very close to Madagascar. That's it. That's all the lemurs in the world live there. There, of course, there's lots of different kinds of lemurs.
Right.
It's kind of like the lemurs are sort of the marsupials of Madagascar in a sense.
Yeah.
And they fill out lots of niches. They're primates. They're very monkey-like, but they do lots of different things in Madagascar, as you know.
Sure.
Big fan of lemurs, Carrie. What's my favorite lemur? You don't know my favorite lemur?
No.
I'm really kind of hurt. It's the eye-eye. I was the eye-eye lemur. The eye-eye is a creature with a very long...
I don't think
long,
that's a lemur.
Maybe it's not a lemur, actually. I'm a big fan of the Indus, the biggest lemur. And of course, we all love the ring-tailed lemurs. Carrie, come on.
Okay.
Wonderful. They're fun. They're fun to have fun with. I kind of want one. Can we get one?
You want everything. And the answer is no.
Damn it. So... it was first settled by Austronesian people, which is sort of Polynesian, kind of, and I exactly think of, but people in that, like the Malay or sort of like that ethnically, or kind of like Polynesian as well, Maori, Hawaiians, Polynesians, they are Austronesian as well. They originally actually are the indigenous people of Taiwan.
Really?
Yeah. Most of they actually came. They think they came from Taiwan. Yeah. People don't realize that people think of Taiwan as China. China, of course, thinks of Taiwan as China, but Chinese, and ethnically they are Chinese, but they had the Formosans were a Malay-like people long before they were Chinese ethnic groups on Taiwan. Very different ethnically.
Huh.
So they probably came in waves. It's not sure when they started. Most people think they started populating Madagascar in like the first century CE, like literally 50, year 50 or so. But some people put them back a little further, some people a little bit later. Some even there's been some recent like 9th you know, edges or looked like what maybe knife cuts on bones at like 11,000 years ago. Most experts think that's nonsense. So something like 2,000-ish years ago, they started populating Madagascar, and they came in waves and they settled in little, you know, different niches, and they spread throughout the island and formed, had kingdoms and such. In the 9th century CE, the Bantu from East Africa started coming over to Madagascar as well. And they brought along with them Zebu cattle and started, you know, cattle-based economy. Okay. Before that, of course, it was more farming and fishing and things like that. And even probably even some hunter-gathering still as well. It's a very forested area. Not anymore. It's one of the most deforested places in the world.
That's too bad.
Yeah, it is. So it has this sort of this melange of all kinds of different people and ethnicities. I guess they have 18 official ethnicities in Madagascar to this day. Most of them are what are called the Marina culture, which think of, they look kind of Polynesian or sort of Southeast Asian kind of.
Vaguely. Do they all get along?
You know, there's a ton of interbreeding and that kind of thing. Yeah, it really is a very mixed ethnicity. And
the answer is probably yes.
I think so. I'm not going to swear to that though.
Okay.
I don't know for a fact. I don't know that there are like ethnic based political parties and things like that. I just don't know.
Yeah. What's our government like?
It's a republic. It's a democracy. They've had some ups and downs with following that democracy, but generally speaking,
haven't we all?
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah, probably soon we'll be much more democratic than we will. So when the first Austronesians arrived on their outrigger canoes some 2,000 or so years ago, it turns out they may actually have been the second wave of people, not the first. Because according to legend, there are already people, I'm going to use air quotes for that, there, spread thinly in different climates. Some would like slash and burn agriculture, some were hunter-gatherers, some were fishing, but they were called the Vazimba. And the Vazimpi people, actually, I'm going to take back that air quote. I'm getting ahead of myself here. The Vazimpi people were undoubtedly people.
Okay.
But they were said to be small. Yeah. Okay. They were smaller, though, than the Austronesians who came in, say, you know, 50 or 100 CE. Mm-hmm. And some people even think they may have been a pygmy peoples. And it seems likely that there was a wave. And so maybe they came in. People think they came in like 400, 500, 300 BC, or BCE, before the Common Era. And, you know, not many of them left. And they think they also came from that same area of say, Indonesia or something like that, or somewhere in Southeast Asia or Polynesia. And they came over, but they were technologically very backward from the other wave that came over maybe a few hundred years later. They didn't have metal. They didn't have rice agriculture, and they didn't know how to, you know, sort of rice paddies, which is a for growing a population is a really important agriculture technological step. Uh-huh. And so they were quickly kind of supplanted by these new peoples, but they held on. They had little kingdoms themselves, little fiefdoms as well. The Bazimba also were almost always, by the way, were ruled by queens, not kings.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have the Bantus coming in. You have other waves of Austronesians coming in, possibly. And so the Vazimba were more and more pushed to the edges and to the margins. And eventually, in the early 1600s, they're kind of thought to be annihilated by the Marina people, who in the central highlands, where most of the population was, and sort of extinct. Now, that's if they were a really racially very different. But a lot of people think, no, they were probably just an early wave. And maybe they were a little bit smaller and a little bit more technologically backward than the wave that came in and became to dominate Madagascar. But they probably just were essentially assimilated, ethnically assimilated into the population. There certainly was already interbreeding between the two, because one of the leading kings, Marina kings, who helped push aside the Vazimba was actually half Vazimba himself, or at least partially from one of their queens who was an ancestor of his. So there was interbreeding from early stage. So that's interesting. There could have been a pygmy, or at least a very small human population that had been before.
What is the definition of pygmy? Like, how small do they have to be?
I don't know, but a lot smaller.
Yeah.
I bet you under 5 feet though.
Yeah.
But I'm not 100% positive on that one. So you feel like you're learning kind of a travelogue/history lesson of Madagascar, don't you? And this
is. Yes, I do.
A quick cryptid corner. Did I not say that? I may have been neglectful there. So we're going to get to that right now, as a matter of fact, because even before the Vizimba, there may have been another, now I am going to use air quotes, human-like creature living in Madagascar. And in recent years, there have been many sightings of this creature that is called the Kalanoro, K-A-L-A-N-O-R-O. This is a cryptid. At least I like to think it is. In fairness to me, it could be human. In fairness to being on Quick Cryptid Corner, most people in Madagascar think of it as an animal, not a human.
Really?
But we're going to describe it now. It's very humanoid. It certainly has human-like features to it, which, of course, could make it some kind of a primate, couldn't it? So it's a strange little beast. It is very hairy, with kind of like usually some spiky tufts of hair along its back. And it stands about 3 feet tall. So it'd be much smaller than any hominid.
Yeah.
And some people say like 2 feet tall, never more than maybe 3.5 feet tall at the most. So 2 to 3 feet tall, generally speaking. Let's call it 3-ish to be nice. And it's bipedal, so it walks like we do. It has arms and legs, just like we do. It has a head. You know, it looks very hominid.
Yeah.
Ish. But it has very sharp teeth and powerful claws. So they're like talons on these hooked fingers. Really sharp and powerful claws.
Okay.
Its eyes glow red. At least in the dark, but everything has eye shine.
Why?
Yeah, I know. I don't know if it's that. If that's meant to be eye shine in the dark. Okay, maybe. But I don't think it's like demon red kind of things. And that I didn't read that in every source that I consulted, so I don't know. Most interestingly, though, and this isn't all the sources, because it's a major characteristic of the Kalanoro, is that it has backward-facing feet. That is, his toes, his heels are in the front, and his toes are facing away from his face and facing along his back.
So that just makes it sound fictional.
It does a little bit, yeah.
Is there any real
animal
that does that?
You know what it does? It actually sounds like it could be like a more tree dwelling, but it's said to be ground dwelling creature. Because right, you can see it how if it had grasping feet or something like that. From what I can tell, though, the feet are supposed to be more or less human feet. They just go backwards, and it's part of the legend around them is that this makes it impossible to track them because you're always going the wrong way. You're going where it came from, not where it's going to.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you think you're tracking a Kalanoro, you just turn around.
Uh-huh.
That's all you do. And then you trace it going backwards. It's like, oh, that bear has claws. Oh, it's walking backwards. We're stumped. So no, you just go the other way. So that seems kind of silly.
Those things seems a little silly.
Those things do seem kind of, you know, things like backward face. And of course the whole, oh, that's why we're never able to catch one. Okay. Stop it. But they are, said to be pretty dangerous. Something you don't want to cross one in the forest. You don't want to meet one. They can be deadly with those claws and those teeth. And they're also said to have superhuman strength. Like, or not, maybe not superhuman strength, but to be immensely strong given how small they are.
Uh-huh.
So they're ferocious little beast if you meet one and piss it off. They eat raw meat, but they hunt and gather, and they are not above raiding human dwellings to steal food. Their voice is said to be very whiny, and it actually freaks out dogs, which tracks if you think about it. You know our dog, if you heard a super whiny voice, it freak out.
Yeah.
Or any loud bang or really lots of noises. They can kind of be assholes in other ways than stealing your food, though, because some natives see the Kalanoro as kind of malevolent and even sometimes kind of spirit-like. We'll get to that when we talk about what they might be, but at the end here, but they do have this sort of weirdness about them that are they real? Are they true creatures? Or are they sort of spirit mythological creatures? Most people think they're real, and we'll get to an intimate actual sighting, some of them very recent.
Really?
From actually some pretty credible people. So hold on for that. Some people see them as almost kind of spirit-like a little bit, and that they can be a little bit, as I mentioned, dangerous with their teeth and claws. But they do one other thing that is kind of not nice, and that's they steal children. They're kidnappers.
Oh, that's bad.
It sounds bad, doesn't it? I'm going to tell you why it's not so bad, though.
They only steal the bad kids?
They only steal the bad kids. That's not a bad idea, actually, if they can tell the future. Uh-huh. But they steal the kids from bad parents, parents who are mistreating those kids.
Oh.
So if those parents, you know, leave out some food, and I guess, I don't know, yell at the forest that will be better or something like that. But there's some kind of, if they have reason to think that you're going to be nicer to your kids, they give them back. So usually those kids are returned.
Oh.
And there's been modern episodes, very recent, where missing children, I think it was northern Madagascar, were missing for a day or two, and the parents left like food or something, or treats or something like that out in the forest for them, because that kind of greases the wheels of the transaction, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Their kids came back. Now, I don't know the details. Did they just got lost and find their way home the next day and is just coincidental?
No, it's that kids who know this story.
Oh.
Who feel like their parents are assholes.
Mm.
They skip town for a few days.
I love
it. And then come back.
I love it.
And then their parents are nicer.
The thing is, though, they also are contactable and they do kind of favors for people, but they only do so through a medium. I'll talk about that in just a little bit more in a second, but there's a story about how the medium would be the person who, you know, your kid went missing, you went and contacted this medium, you paid them, but then you left like little gifts outside, like rice or rum, something like that. And then the medium would intercede with the colonaro and have them return that child unharmed. If that doesn't sound like a low-rent kidnapping scam, I don't know what does. Because that, I don't know. I mean, again,
that's just kidnapping for ransom.
It sure does seem like it, but with this kind of spirit and cryptid veneer to it, and you blame it on the colonaro, poor guys. So that's interesting, at least.
Well, do the kids always get returned?
Yes, but, you know, you don't hear a lot of details of these things, so... Where were the kids? Who were they with? Uh-huh. Did they see who were they with? Was it a little hairy creature with sharp claws and spiky fur on the back? I don't know that is who it was. Sometimes they're creatures of nature too. They are known to frolic in streams and like special bond with like crocodiles and eels and snakes and things like that, which is cool, especially crocodiles. I didn't know there were crocodiles in Madagascar.
I didn't either.
There are. That makes I want to go to Madagascar, as you know, because I want to taste vanilla. But I mean the purest vanilla carry, not over from a ship, no, fresh off a tree or bush or whatever the hell vanilla comes from. What is vanilla?
Flowers.
Come from? Flowers. Oh, okay. Well, that. So I thought they might be vanilla trees.
I don't know. I don't know about the actual bean. Isn't it like some kind of orchid or something?
Is it?
Yeah,
probably.
I
just know it's dark.
Yeah, I don't know.
And
where
it's very
the bean
long
comes
and thin.
From.
And you scrape it out from the middle. Right?
Yeah.
That's the good flavor. Uh-huh. Okay. That's all I know.
Or if you want to make your own vanilla extract, you just buy some beans and then you put them in a bottle of vodka.
Vodka?
Uh-huh.
Is that how you invented vanilla vodka?
Probably.
Sure. Why not? Let's go with it. That makes vanilla extract. So wait, are you saying vanilla extract is alcoholic?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
But it's such a tiny amount.
Doesn't sound like tiny. You said you put it in a bottle of vodka.
To make a big bottle of vanilla.
Oh, and then what? Dilute it?
I mean, you could also put it in a tiny bottle of vodka.
Nah,
but
I'm a big
if you're going to go through all the trouble, you're going to make a big bottle.
Oh, yeah.
And it takes like a year.
Oh, well, you know, I don't have that kind of patience.
I often think about making my own vanilla and giving it as Christmas gifts, but I don't think about it until October or November. Yeah.
Well, you're also making your sourdough starter. Carrie, how is that going for you
It's going terribly. Yeah. Thanks, Dean, for asking.
Sure. Are you going to cry?
No.
Okay.
I'm scrapping it and I'm going to start over, though.
Okay. Well, are you going to, do you want to badmouth here on the podcast, the book that you read?
No.
Okay.
Because it's not her fault.
You were going to a little while ago earlier today. You're going to I'm going to rat her out.
But not publicly.
Okay. So...
No, I said bad review of the book.
Oh, okay. Okay. But you're not even going to do that.
Well, here's the thing. She writes it like this is a foolproof. This is the best way, the only way. And it's just funny.
To make a sourdough starter.
Mm-hmm. I think if you just slapdash and put some flour and water in a jar and put it in the corner of your kitchen, you're going to get a sourdough starter.
I know nothing
about it. I don't know. I went through her, meticulous little method and... Nothing.
You do sound angry.
I'm a little angry.
Okay. Let's get back to the colonaro. I see I'm upsetting you.
Yeah, you started
so, they love fire too, by the way. And they like to hang out at I guess they don't have the power of fire. I don't know. So there's a story from Travel Africa magazine. Didn't know that existed, but it did. It said some person named Eloy. Eloy saw his first colonaro in a rice paddy behind his village and describes it as a little man less than a meter tall with hair all over his body and long fingernails, end quote. They can apparently be lured by the irresistible smell of frying pistachio nuts. This is, again, still according to Travel Africa magazine. But attempts to catch them are unusually unsuccessful because, boom, their feet point backwards.
Sure.
And hunters invariably track them in the wrong way. That was the wrong quote I just read, but let's stay with it because...
How do they walk?
I don't know. Yeah, it wouldn't be... I mean, you could. It's not. I mean, yeah, it seems like you'd fall forward a lot. Yeah, maybe just lean back. They lean, they put their weight back, and they just learn how to do it. Their bottom of their legs a little bit forward. I think it's fine. Okay, so that was the frying pistachio story. I know I have a story. I'll get to it eventually about them and campfires. But the medium can also intercede for you, not just when your kid is kidnapped with the colonaro, but just generally things. So you go to a medium and you have to visit the medium at night if you want to contact a colonaro to help you, I don't know, with answering questions or just help you in life in some form or fashion, right? Because again, they're seen as kind of, there's a spiritual element to them beyond an actual real creature element.
Are they wise?
Apparently.
Or something?
I'm going to have to say yes. Or somehow they can intercede and help you out.
But I'm assuming they don't have language. I mean, do they speak?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, I've never heard that. But so you go to the medium, you visit them at night. And by the way, you can only interact with them through a wall or closed door, red flag alert. And when the medium begins, so the medium like goes into a trance, and they don't use the word channeling, but that's what the medium does. And you know it's the colonaro speaking through the medium when their voice becomes nasally and high-pitched.
Oh, because they have whiny voices.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There you go. So, and you know, the medium, I don't know, gives you the lowdown gambling. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what they help you with. Their hair is magic, though. So not only does it give them their strength, Samson-like, it's said that the hair gives them that kind of immense strength out of proportion to their size. But there are some native herbalists in Madagascar. They're called Moises, and they make potions from colonaro hair. They grind it up and they use it for different potions and in part like mystical powers or something like that.
Okay.
So that's cool. And both Moises all the way can act as mediums as well. So they have, you know, that's not bad.
Sure.
You can get a potion from them and ask a colonaro a really important question. I mean, it's honestly better than astrology. I 100% mean that. Well, one of the reasons, by the way, you'll go to the medium is you think you did something bad and you pissed off a colonaro, like you invaded their space in the forest or something like that. I think there's other reasons, but that's one of the reasons.
Okay.
So I mentioned sightings. There's been lots of sightings. In 1924, the ex-governor of Michigan named Chase Salmon Osborne said he saw a colonaro in Madagascar. He traveled when he tried to run for office, higher office, lost, and I guess he was wealthy, so he just went, and he was a publisher, and he went and traveled the world a lot, and he went to Madagascar. And in 1924, he supposedly saw one, and he said, quote, "They must have been on a honeymoon," end quote, "because they were making love by his campfire." So that would be interesting. Whoa, sorry, guys.
Sure.
I mean, let me step back into the forest, let you guys finish up. I apologize. Professor Joe Hobbs of the University of Missouri in Columbia, he's in the Department of Geography there. He was in May of 2000. He was in Michigan and he was studying the colonaro and talking to locals about it. And he said he talked to people in various places. They lived in like caves. The locals say, yeah, we know about them. We consider them animals. They live in caves not too far away from here. They were considered sacred because as recently as just 2 years ago, grief-stricken parents whose children had wandered into the forest had recovered them alive here, end quote, after food was left for the colonaro. So there's that tradition, at least, that goes in different parts of the island and goes back many years.
Huh.
Yeah, it is interesting. I don't know if there's just mass kidnapping gangs in Madagascar.
I
don't think so. And but there's been some supposed sightings too that are a little bit questionable. And I guess one of the one that was put forward a lot by the proponents of the colonaro was this idea that in 1889, some members of the Royal Geographical Society of London in England were in Madagascar, and they said, oh, we saw these Kalinara. We, you know, European people saw these Kalinara, and they wrote up about it. I guess researchers have since have looked in every possible source where they've written up into that, written that about, yeah. And it's just not true. There's okay. No record whatsoever in the annals of the Royal Geographical Society of London about any kind of Kalinara sighting. So that appears not to have happened. What did happen, though, was in 2011, Discovery Channel, which is very reliable, as we know, aired an episode of the show Destination Truth with Josh Gates, one of my favorite, super honest researchers. He always tells it like it is. I'm not gonna. He doesn't usually say, "Oh, that's proof." I believe he's not nearly as bad as a lot of folks on these basic cable channels who like Zach Bagans, who sees a ghost every yeah. other day
yeah.
and is convinced or something's, you know, possessed by a demon, a doll, things like that. He will almost always end the show with, no, you know, we didn't find proof, but gosh, isn't it interesting? Kind of like that. He sort of yeah. does it halfway. He's not as bad. That's a low hurdle. But in season 4, episode 6, they did, of Destination Truth, they did the Kalinara. That show usually did, is an hour show, and it would do like two things. It would do one somewhere, one, you know, a cryptid or animal, something like that. And the next part of that same episode would be another, you know, in this case, they did like ghost in some crater in East Africa. Oh. And then second half was the Kalinara in Madagascar. I'm thinking this, hey, we're in East Africa. Let's just fly over yeah. to Madagascar, knock this one out. We've got this Kalinara. Let's do a twofer.
Let's be honest.
Yes.
If some basic cable channel show offered you the job,
go on,
to travel around the world,
absolutely,
and try to find, you know, goofy made up
yes
cryptids, yes. Would you do it?
I would sell out hard.
Yep.
I would 100% do that. I'm not gonna make any bones about it. For sure, without yep, any question.
That's so, what I thought.
No, I'm not. I mean, absolutely, I'm not gonna lie.
I'm not about it. Sounds like a pretty good gig.
It's
to
a
me.
Great gig. I'm jealous, obviously. So they talk to a guy from, wait for it, the Chicago Museum of Natural History. He's a biologist named Dr. Stephen Goodman. In fact, he's the only field biologist associated with the Chicago Museum of Natural History. He lives in Madagascar for most of the year. I know.
Really?
Yeah. He's studied. He's a very respected academic.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. I'm interested to hear what he has to say about
Absolutely certain that Kalinaras do exist because he saw one.
Oh.
He was setting nets for, I think it was birds. He was trying to catch birds of nets, and he got to one of his nets. It was near a ridge, and he saw a 3 to 3.5 foot long, furry, humanoid creature. I think I got the sense that it was stuck in the net, and it unstuck itself and slipped over the ridge and was not seen. But he states he's on camera with Josh Gates and says, yeah, I know they do. I saw one.
Okay, did he see backwards facing feet?
I don't know if he saw backwards. It sounds like it was a pretty quick view, but he's a very highly respected biologist.
How close was he to it?
I don't know. I don't remember. He just
I think it was a lemur. I think it was a lemur.
Almost certainly was a lemur. but it is intriguing that this person who is very credible and doesn't sound like I looked him up from what I could, and he sounds 100% legit.
How long has he lived there?
Quite a while, actually.
Yeah. See, he's just steeped in the culture.
I thought about that too.
Yeah.
He could be, he's a very pro Madagascar guy.
Yes.
And he, you know, he does love the culture. And so, did he want to see a Kalinara? When I was in Costa Rica for a very short time, every snake was a Fertilance because I really wanted to see a Fertilance because they're a very venomous snake.
Uh huh.
And so, every snake looked like one. I am, though, not a field biologist by any stretch. So, you know, you'd think you'd know the difference between a lemur and a Kalinara. You would think, Dr.
Yeah,
Stephen.
But, you know, our eyes deceive
that's
us.
That's true. That's true. They Even also
the
talk.
Best of us.
They talk to like a forest official. Maybe he was a forest ranger up in the north part of the island of Madagascar. The show did. And he was like a government park official, something like that. And he said, 100%. They're real. I've seen them on two occasions. I know people I know very well who have seen them. We get reports of them. They're not common, but we do get reports of them kind of semi-regularly. And he, too, was absolutely convinced that Kalinara are real things.
Okay.
So So Carrie, a little Miss Doubter over here.
No, here's what I doubt. Do I doubt there might be some little creature? Sure, maybe. What I doubt is that they kidnap children, that their feet are backwards.
I like the idea. The kidnap children one, I don't know.
No, absolutely not.
They're kind of like an opposite Chris Hansen. That doesn't make any sense, actually.
No.
So, well, let's get to explanations in a minute.
Okay.
I want to finish with the same park ranger said that they asked him, are these things dangerous? He said, absolutely. He said, basically, they can push in their nails. They'll, like, push you right in the gut and just rip it up and rip them out. And, like, he didn't say disentrail, but it sounds like that. So I'm scared of them. Do I want to go look for one in Madagascar when we go and taste a real vanilla? You're goddamn right I do. Now that I know there are crocodiles there, kind of want to stay away from the rivers, but
I think that guy is lazy and he doesn't want tourists coming
into
his national forest or park or whatever.
You're slandering this perfectly fine gentleman from Madagascar.
Do you believe all of these stories?
I think he does.
Did he see that happen?
I don't think he saw that happen necessarily.
Then why is he going around saying that?
Friend of a friend of a friend saw that happen is what I'm going to assume. The rest of the show, by the way, was classic of this genre, had all the tropes. How do you end every break? Not every break, but how do you end most commercial breaks right before you have a commercial?
I like a cliffhanger.
Always. Yeah. In a ghost shows, it's, what was that? And in this, it was like the first one. On this, on the Culinara, remember the Culinara is just the second half of the show.
Right.
But the first one is like somebody heard something. It's like, and like something in the forest. So she goes down and she starts running. And then she's all of a sudden, and she's slipping. Like she's going, and they show she's going to fall into this river. You know, cut to the commercial, come back. Her slip stops after, I'm going to say a foot and a half. She's nowhere near the stream.
Yeah.
She's fine. They just lose the fact that she said she heard something. Just, I mean, literally keep it rolling for a half a second. There'd be no suspense whatsoever on that pre-commercial break. It was hilarious. Like they got to have at least two per segment. And then, so then it's them just walking around with their GoPros on, their lights. Remember, there's a camera crew and sound people filming them right there next to them, clearly setting up the stage because they're ahead of them when they come into a clearing or whatever. So it's so much phonier than people realize. I know it until you think it must be because I'm seeing the camera person is waiting for them to come into the shot.
Right.
But it's literally staged. I mean, you do have the GoPro things, but you know, but you have all these sets stage scenes all the time. And by the way, why does it always have to be goddamn at night?
Yes.
I know the answer because it's spookier. There's no reason to do that. It's not like, oh, they're nocturnal. No, there's no one says they're nocturnal.
Yeah.
Go do this shit in the daytime where you can see a lot better.
Yeah.
No, that's not nearly as interesting. It's hilarious. It's a tell, though. And then somebody, one of the crew or whatever, I think they have someone, they set up some infrared cameras and things like that. And one of them says, Josh, I see something. He's like, I'm going there. I'm going. I'll be there to the camera. And so they run to the camera. And there is actually nothing whatsoever. There's nothing there at the camera. But they do catch sight using one of those FLIR, F-L-I-R, one of those thermal cameras.
Yeah.
It catches heat. They see something. And it looked, honestly, I'm not going to lie, it looked bipedal to me.
Yeah.
Of course, that could have been a lemur, you know, bounding away. I mean, lemurs walk all fours.
Right.
But you see kind of a vague, you know, that orange yellow shape amongst like, you know, deep green or purples or blues is how those thermal cameras convey.
Right. Yeah.
Can't really make much out. It looks like a blob more or less. Then they find what looks a little bit like a footprint. You saw that. You came in actually when I was watching it. You
I
came
did
in
and see
saw
that part, footprint. Yeah.
It was a little bit of a muddy dent in the, you know, grassy, muddy part of the forest. It did look vaguely like a footprint, kind of.
Maybe.
I guess. And they're wondering, is that a kid? There can't be any kids around here.
There's no kids around here.
I mean, probably not, but there might be.
Well,
they're
certainly not at the moment, but you know.
And then and of course they have to have a cliffhanger for the break. So they have another infrared shot of something moving through the forest. And you have Josh Gage that yells, "He's on the move! He's on the move!" Exclamation point. Break, come back, and it's like, no, we didn't see any. No, no, I'm sorry. The thermal shot, they go, "Now we're pretty sure that was a lemur."
Oh, okay.
And then he ends it with, again, to his credit, they say, "Okay, we're pretty sure the shot was a lemur. The footprint, we're not sure." They did say this, that they thought the conditions were too wet to do a cast.
Yeah.
Which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. It's just you're pouring a liquid in there. Actually, a moist ground would actually make that easier to do. But let's be kind. And they say, "No, we don't think there's a Colinaro. We don't think we saw any evidence of a Colinaro." But it's like, huh, who knows? And you kind of have to end that kind of a show on that kind of a note. I get it. So what is it? What is this Colinaro? Most people think it's what you think.
A lemur.
A lemur. Yeah. Some kind of a lemur. You know, it could even be the size of it and it's the fact that it lives on the ground. Some folks think it might be a memory of extinct larger lemurs that were around.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, that seems big for a lemur.
It is big for a lemur.
Yeah.
The biggest lemur is an Indurus, and it's, oh God, I can't remember, but these things, it wouldn't be, actually it might be 3 feet tall, but they don't walk on two legs.
Yeah.
And again, there's no, I mean, lemurs are like bears. They can walk on two legs awkwardly with their arms out for a short while.
Yeah.
But not, the legends of the Colinaro wouldn't make it bipedal if that was true, right? Because lemurs do that uncommonly. But there were some lemurs that did live on the ground. The Archaea lemur, there was a thing called the sloth lemur that was bigger and lived on the ground. There's a thing called the Hadropithecus, which, and these lemurs, by the way, they lived into modern times. They were mostly, for the most part, wiped out by humans.
Yeah.
They were killed and hunted by humans.
Yeah.
And the humans have only been there in Madagascar for something like 2,000 years. So one of those bigger lemurs survived into like the Middle Ages, as a matter of fact. So it's kind of sad, actually.
Are there any other primates like apes or anything?
No.
No monkeys?
Nope.
Or
no monkey, okay. No apes. Nothing like that at all. Some of these big lemurs were almost said to be sort of baboon-like.
Yeah.
And their behavior was a little bit more like baboons than they lived on the ground. Again, those large lemurs are all now extinct. The biggest one is the Indurus, and that lives in trees.
Well, maybe they're not completely extinct.
No, they do. Lemurs do come down to the ground, though, a lot.
Yeah.
There's the largest predator there is called the fossa. And the fossa is like a mid-sized cat. I don't know. Like, it's maybe, I don't know if it's even as big as a lynx. Maybe it's about as big as a bobcat or so. It's not a cat. It's very cat-like.
Right.
It's one of the most unusual predators in the world.
You love them.
I'm a huge fan of fossas. And that's what I want to see. I want to go to Madagascar to see a fossa. Uh-huh. I want to adopt a ringtail lemur. I'm going to sneak it home. Mm-hmm. And once it's back here, what are you going to do? You're going to have to keep it and feed it and take care of it like all of our pets.
Who's going to?
You.
Oh,
I'm very clear about this. Uh-huh. I'm not going to lie. So I'll take care of it. I'm not an idiot. So
yeah, I'm not an idiot either.
Okay. Some people think also it's a myth. Maybe back to the Vizimba. If there was a pygmy race back then, and they were living until the 1600s, and maybe even still do today, you'd think that's true, though. It wouldn't be so non-human-like, and they wouldn't be thought of as animals, not humans.
Yeah.
Bernard Heuvelmans, the famous cryptozoologist, who wrote two of the biggest books in the history of cryptozoology, he was a believer, of course. He said, quote, "These legends may be fantastic, but they are found all over Madagascar, and it would be odd if they were utterly without foundation," unquote. Which, of course, is
seriously
nonsense, because guess what else? Fairies, elves, they're all over Europe. They're people, you know, and their description is very consistent.
Yes.
But they don't exist. So that's kind of sloppy, sloppy thinking.
Let me stop you there.
Do you think fairies and elves? Okay, you've gone along with fairies and elves, but not Colinaro.
Yes.
Ethnocentrism at its worst right now, Carrie.
No.
Yes, you are. Yes, Carrie. Absolutely. You're European. I am so disgusted. You already badmouthed a forest ranger from Madagascar, Carrie. Oh, God. I apologize to the people of Madagascar. All the Malagasy people, I'm apologizing for Carrie.
Now, if somebody said their fairies or elves have backwards feet,
then you would not believe in fairies and elves.
They lose me there.
So because fairies have front-facing feet, you believe in them. Just to be clear.
I don't believe in them. I was being silly. But there, I would leave room for a possibility.
I should be in the Senate questioning potential Trump cabinet members. Gotta say, tell me yes or no. Do you believe in fairies if they have frontward-facing feet, ma'am? Yes or no? That's what I would say. Hold him to it. So,
and I would have to say that's an anonymous smear on the front facing feet.
Right. Anonymous smears. Really? Because you knew who they were because you paid them, you little bitch. So the Culinaro is essentially thought of now as kind of a humanoid cryptid, effectively, hence its presence on Quick Cryptid Corner. And, but again, there's this element of them as being kind of spiritual as well. So it's not, what could be, some people think is, maybe they were something, but now they're extinct. And so they've been elevated to this sort of ethereal realm. In sure. Some state. That's what Gary likes.
I think they were never anything. I think they're a legend.
How about
this? They're an old, you know, tale from whenever. And
do you think now all of those cultures that where the Austronesians came from, in Indonesia, in Borneo, in Malay, people like places like that, they pretty much all have some kind of a legend about a small forest-dwelling humanoid-like creature. Some of those were real, like Homo floresiensis on the Flores Island in Indonesia. That, of course, was, we think, thousands of years ago. Maybe not. Going to have an episode on that one of these days. I like to think they're still there. We need to go to Flores Island and find them.
Okay.
So I would ask you the question of, did they bring something with them when they went to Madagascar from their home? Did they bring something that was their myth? Or did they bring something that was real? Did they have some of with them on those outrigger canoes? And they let them loose into the forest, and they became the Culinaro. I choose to believe the latter, and I hope you do too.
No, I don't.
But damn it.
They brought their myths. They brought their stories.
Yeah, I suppose. And when they first saw lemurs were very strange to them. They were like nothing they'd seen before. Maybe, Carrie, maybe you're right. Maybe these are just lemurs that have been altered and mythologized. Are maybe not. So when we go to Madagascar,
okay,
when we go get the vanilla, when we go find a fossa, when we go adopt a ring-tailed lemur, we also need to go find a Culinaro. Will we use the whole ploy of rice or rum in the forest as a trap, Gary? Maybe we will. Or we can take our kids and make them kidnapped.
Our kids are not really kids anymore, but sure.
Adult napped.
You kidnap my 30-year-old.
They're our kids, so we have to put the rice and rum, and we don't walk out of the forest. We hide somewhere nearby when the Culinaro comes to get that treat. Boom.
Because
we know the backward feet, so we know how to chase them.
And nobody's ever thought of
this
before.
No one's thought of that. We have.
Exactly.
So that's going to happen.
Also, I want to say, are we done?
Yes.
Okay. I'm setting the record straight. I'm not ethnocentric in what little creatures. What do elves and fairies have in common?
They are not real. What do you
get? They're tiny.
Oh, you like tiny things.
I like tiny things.
Well, you know what else is tiny, Carrie? At 2 to 3 feet?
That's
Culinaro.
Not tiny.
It's pretty damn tiny.
No,
how big are
like
elves? Are bigger
miniature.
Than 2 feet. Elves aren't. You're thinking of lawn gnomes, garden gnomes. Elves are like, I'm going to say 2 or 3 feet.
Oh, they are not.
Four.
Well, did we say elves?
I said elves. Oh. Elves and fairies. How big are fairies? And don't go twinkle. What the hell is the Disney fairy?
Tinkerbell.
Tinkerbell. That's not, all fairies aren't that small. I don't think fairies are supposed to be that small.
Well, it depends.
That's just Disney.
There's some fairy fiction where they're as big as people. They're just. They're literally people.
I'm resting my case.
But I don't believe in those kind of theories.
Okay. You sound very selective in your belief.
I only like the little miniature ones.
They are, in folktales, small, from a few inches tall to the size of a child. Some depictions, as you say, show them as being more or less human size, depending on the specific legend or region, says AI Google. Oh, so it
there
could
you
be
go.
A complete fiction.
No, I like
a hallucination.
I like the little ones that, you know, they use mushrooms as umbrellas and stuff
well,
like that.
Well, AI Google says 7.5 centimeters to 3 feet. I'm sorry.
That's very precise.
No, wait. I'm sorry. Down to a height of 3 inches are 7.5 centimeters. Sorry, okay. My bad. I didn't mean to smear AI Google.
Yeah.
There's plenty of that. So that's the story of the Culinaro here on the latest Quick Cryptid Corner. We hope you enjoyed that. We'll see you next time for a full episode sometime soon.
Yeah.
Okay.
We won't see you.
No,
you
we
won't
see
us either,
that's
but
true.
You'll hear us.
That's a good point. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.